Are we on?
Should we do some check? Let's ask the back-end team, are we live or are we live? We'll just wait for it. Yes, perfect. We've got the green signal. I love this. I feel like I am hosting a radio show or maybe next level because we're on video now. So good evening, everyone. It is, really. I'm coming for you, Kyle Sanderlins. I am coming for you. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Friday Night Lives. This is episode 2. I've got two very, very lovely gentlemen with me today. I've got Sean, the director of JR, and Mark, a wealth consultant, and your very own Keshav, who's going to be part hosting it, part interacting with you and asking a few interesting questions. So today, guys, is an incredible video. A conversation that actually started up in a digital office, in a Zoom meeting office, as we do them nowadays. In fact, guys, actually, I digress here a little bit. I heard that we are in lockdown in Sydney for another 4 weeks. So hold on tight. Keep your sanity. Do lots of push-ups, lots of water, and keep working hard. So anyway, coming back. Today's topic is about things that hold value beyond the average thing that will make you feel like it's common sense. It should hold value, right? So things like luxury, say watches and cars and handbags and things that usually people think lose value, they actually have gone up incredibly well. In fact, some of them have outperformed shares and real estate. So it's very, very interesting. And this shows us a lot about the behavioral side of the human being, right? There's a side where you are very, very, who can say intrinsic. So, hey, this is the cost of the brick, this is the cost of concrete, this is the cost of the land, and what should this actually cost me? And sometimes people are willing to pay 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 times more for things like that. So if you guys are wondering what I'm talking about, let me talk about the Mona Lisa for a second, right? Sean, if I said to you, you can buy the Mona Lisa for, say, I know it's priceless, $1 billion. Sean, if he had the money, would actually go ahead and buy it. Sean would not come back to me and say, hey, listen, mate, what was the canvas cost? How old is it? What sort of paint did you use? Oh, it's the lady. Maybe I like giraffes. People don't look at the Mona Lisa in that way. There is something about the Mona Lisa that drives appeal. Whether Sean buys it or Mark buys it as an asset that they can hang on the wall, flex in life and show how the world they're going, which will and get the appreciation, or they're a massive fan of art. Similarly, there's lots and lots of things in life. So we started having a conversation at work. One thing common between Mark, Sean and myself is we love watches. And we appreciate watches, and not from a status or look at me sort of place, but it is very personal to us. In fact, I'm not even wearing any today.
I'm sure Mark's wearing his. Mark, do you want to do a bit of a dangle for us?
Do we have a little watch today, Mark? Are we putting in the spot? I love that.
We're sitting Swiss today, aren't we?
We are sitting Swiss today. So we started to talk about things that we have bought. So Mark, let me start this conversation with you. You actually had a really good point offline about your watch journey. So tell me about that.
Yeah, so it's not been that long. And in that time, it's actually performed quite well. It's something that a close friend of mine has taught me about as well. So again, it goes a lot deeper than just a watch on the wrist. It doesn't incorporate, you know, how flashy you can be or how much it you know, appeals to the friends around you or the network around you, let's just say. To cut a long story short, it was purchased, there was a couple of them purchased in December 2019. And to today's date, value of them have gone up approximately 40%. So if we look at that, in, I guess, a 20-month period or even, about a 20-month period is probably what we're looking at, and break that down as a potential internal rate of return, it's probably not bad. It's quite healthy. I think.
Doing better than the savings account, I'll tell you that much. I'll tell you that much. Sean, what about yourself? Tell me your story.
Yeah, so it's a story with when it comes to luxury items or even watches, it's all about intrinsic value as much as possible. And what I realized is that just from conversations around the office, Mark and I talk numerous times around things like luxury items and watches, because sometimes when you're on a journey of let's say, your own pursuit of excellence, whatever that may be, there's things that are luxury in terms of collectible wines. There's things that are luxury in terms of not only watches, but you've got cars as well. And sometimes what you're looking at is the intrinsic value just simply can't be measured. But I know it's very hard for people to wrap their heads around it. And a funny story is we had someone in the company, I think, badmouth the whole idea of luxury watches and badmouth all these luxury assets and so forth and so on. But long story short, that person's no longer in the company anymore. And that's all the story. I'm not going to say the reason as to why they're not in the company anymore. Who knows? Maybe they had another job come up. Maybe it just, maybe they retired, whatever happened. But it was very interesting to see that, a lot of people won't necessarily see it the same way you do. So I do feel you have to be on a different level of appreciation to really appreciate beauty when it comes to things like watches, or whether it's something that's a limited edition, if that's something that tickles your fancy,
100%. I've actually got a really good case study for people who want to make a quick buck. So I'm just going to share my screen very quickly here, and I'm going to show you a comparison, right? So I'll get back to that article. Let me actually go. So this is the Australia Rolex website. This is called the Rolex GMT on the Oyster. You can either get the Oyster bracelet or the Jubilee bracelet. So this is the Jubilee bracelet. This was launched last year. It's a stainless steel watch. 40 millimeter, nothing fancy, no gold, no diamonds, no nothing. And Rolex sells it for about $13,600. Now you can go buy a stainless steel watch for as little as $450. And if it's decent automatic, maybe $1,000, right? And I want to show you something, right? I really want to show you something. And I want to have a discussion around this. Is today a used Rolex the same thing in the used market? This website is Chrono24. If for the watch nuts, you can go compare prices. Today, used sells for about $31,000. So technically, Mark could walk into Rolex today, purchase the watch for $13,000, and the same evening, flip it for $31,000. Now, you guys sitting there might go, that is just stupid. Why wouldn't the guy just go and buy it from the authorized dealer? The reality is Rolex controls the supply. In fact, it's easier to get a full gold Rolex than it is to get a stainless steel. Now, what this really teaches me, what this really shows me, is that there's something going on that the Rolex brand has done. Okay. The Rolex brand has done that people are willing to go ahead. Like Mark has now purchased something because he likes it. It's gone up 40% in value. So I would narrow this down to behavioral economics. It's not about the watch. It's not about that it's stainless steel. It's about the person who's purchased this luxury item has bought it because for him or her, this means something. It might be a badge of honor. It might be, as Gen Z would call it, a flex. It might be something they're super passionate about. And the reason it's going up in value, and Sean, you did cover this on a previous video with the Bondi example you and I did, that people are willing to pay a premium to get access to this because they don't want to wait 3 or 4 or 5 years. Now, I can give you another example. This is NFT. So NFT is digital art. For people who don't understand that, there's an artist called Beeple who sold an NFT. This is literally digital art, okay? Any guy in Photoshop could have made this. This sold for $69 million.
Wow.
Now, you might sit there and go, oh, he's an idiot. I could have just printed the same thing. My three-year-old could have made it. The person who made this purchase will always be the original owner. And the person who spent $69 million to make this purchase has obviously had some achievements in life that they could sell, spend that on a Photoshop piece of art. There is a reason behind this, right? There is a reason behind this. Things like this have stayed in history, like Michael Jackson's original jacket, right? Let me give you another example. I'll give you a really, really good example. As of today, Lamborghini has launched in 2021. They have just launched the Lamborghini Countach 2021. So this car was built in the 1960s or so on and so forth. There's a whole story behind Lamborghini. And the original Countach, they made only 121 examples of that. And they have recreated a modern day version of that. And they've created only 121 of these. And guess what? Each car is $3 to $4 million USD. They're already pre-sold, unseen. And the person, the day they deliver it, everyone has to sign. Everyone has to sign that they can't flip it, because every millionaire and billionaire who's gotten access to this deal knows my vehicle. This is priceless stuff. So when you're buying things, right, there's two ways to look at it. It's, you can spend silly money on stuff from a status perspective. And so I'm not talking about that. What I'm talking about is us with human behavior, how we attach value to certain things. And we've seen that in multiple industries. Now, I can give you an example of another company called Patek Philippe. Someone who's a watch nut. Rolex is quite common, so I started with that example. Pateks are really, really the Rolls Royce. If I would say Rolex is Mercedes and Patek is Rolls Royce, if you will. A $35,000 stainless steel Patek on the secondhand market sold for $490,000. So you could literally, if you could source that watch at Patek, you could walk away. Mate, that's better returns than any real estate or Bitcoin. All you have to do is hunt that watch down, buy it on your credit card and flip it the same night, right? And you can make $300,000, $400,000, $500,000. You can make $250,000. Yeah. Why is this happening, guys? And Mark, what do you think, according to you, why we as people have these attachments? Where does it come from? And why do people consistently add value to things that is important to them? What do you think the influences are?
Look, I think it really boils down to, I guess, how anything is perceived in your eyes. So, you know, if I use myself as an example, I set myself a goal. I put a vision board up. You know, I wanted to achieve it, and I didn't go, over the top crazy in order to achieve that goal, but I said, I'm going to do this. Now, to be fair, my collection, you know, what I've got is probably a step down to what I originally wanted. But I thought, you know what, it doesn't matter, because it's the old analogy where you aim for the moon and hit the stars, or the other way around, right? And that's how I took it. So I guess, you know, to someone, let's say someone purchased this Patek at $490,000, they may not have been able to get their hands on Jacobs and Co, for example. And I do believe Jay-Z was sporting a, wasn't Jacobs and Co, I think it was a
Richard Mille,
that's right. $2.5 million or there, whatever it was, that sapphire, that blue sapphire watch. Now, they could have been aiming for that and said, well, I'm going to go for the next best thing, but it's still a good investment at the end of the day, because, again, it's not top of the top, but it's somewhere there. And why I mention all of this is to say it all comes down to what people's wants and desires are. We know what the retail value is, because if we do weigh up the actual cost to produce these items, to source the metals, whatever it may be that the item is made out of, it's about whatever that person is willing to pay in order to have a feeling. I think that's really all it boils down to, is having that feeling inside, feeling of achievement, feeling of their own self-worth, to say, hey, even if it did put me in a world of pain, I went out and did this, you know, and I know I can do it again. And that's, to be completely fair, I mean, look, maybe if we don't look on a global scale, but let's look on a local scale. Let's look at Sydney. You know, a lot of people do put themselves in a spot of bother financially in order to achieve goals, because that's how much these goals mean to people. And I think you can look at that as an admirable thing, and you can also look at that as a stupid thing as well. I see it, you know, more on the admirable side. Because, hey, if you're able to do one thing, you can definitely do another. It's just a different level to it. So, again, I know I tangent a little bit from time to time, but I do believe that everything boils down to the inner want, and what you perceive the value of that is. You know, someone may look at that Lamborghini we just looked at and said, I'm very happy with my Toyota Camry. I spent $30,000 on it. It does the exact same thing. I might not get the status that I steal from Northern Beaches to Bankstown, you know, in the same amount of time as I would in the Lamborghini.
I'll tell you something, Matt. I completely agree with you. And guys, the audience who's watching, if you're watching it on replay, you're watching it right now, give us a like, give us support, give us your perspective of, you know, it might not be cars, might not be watches, something else that you hold to value, you know, something, it could be a book, it could be a Pokemon card for all I care. Something that is invaluable to you, it means something to you, represents something to you. Absolutely, put in the chat. We would love to see that. And I agree with you, Mark, but I gotta disagree with the guy who thinks the Camry and the Lambo is the same thing, because the V12 in a tunnel, oh brother, it gets your heart going. And this feeling that I'm telling you right now, this feeling, for someone might be silly, but I'll tell you what, I want to do it. I'm going to die trying doing it, and I'm going to do it because it means something to me, right? This boils down to the crux of human behavior and behavioral economics. Now, let Sean jump in here. Sean, what is your perspective? Why do you think people are willing to spend this sort of money on digital art, Pokemon cards, I don't know, watches, whatever it might be, alcohol, experiences? What is your thoughts?
Yeah, because pretty much you're looking at a situation where putting a price tag on that feeling that you get when you acquire something, or putting a price tag when you've acquired something that's limited edition, simply can't be bought, right? And when you're looking at having a very limited amount of time on Earth, and you do want to be one of those people that are securing, let's say, limited edition art or securing limited edition vehicles, sometimes I feel that it boils down to passion as well. So when I'm saying it boils down to passion, like with the personality that I have, I would comfortably see myself spending a boatload of cash on unnecessary items. When we say unnecessary items, like let's say a nice car, or enjoying a nice car experience, or driving a sports car, for example. But I would never spend an obscene amount of money on clothing, for example. So the way I would see it is, there are people that still love designer clothes, right? There are people that love designer handbags. Well, I like those things, possibly not. Was it APs or IPs? What was it?
The hype beast, the Balenciaga jumpers.
Balenciagas, exactly. And don't get me wrong, like I've made a few jokes in the house about deciding that because everything's locked down, I might go and buy myself a Gucci tracksuit to do all these Zooms in, and I just get hit with all the...
I paid to watch that. Oh, my God. But Sean, I'm with you there. I'm one of those people. I always tell my wife, I'll wear a $5 cotton on, I don't even know what a cotton on t-shirt, or $5, $10 cotton on t-shirt, but I got to rock the AP, brother. It just means something to me, right?
Exactly.
Coming back to this, let me show you a few more examples. And then I've got a very interesting piece about behavioral economics, because I think what the rich have done consistently well, whether it's with real estate, whether it's with shares, they have found a way to hack human behavior and make us attach a certain feeling, a certain sentiment with a thing, that where we go and we're willing to pay that sort of stuff. So somehow a Seiko or a G-Shock might be showing you the same time, but doesn't feel like a Pate on someone who really loves it. And the rich have just gotten richer hacking behavioral economics. So Facebook's or Instagrams of the world have realized we as humans have a certain behavior and we're willing to pay a premium to do certain things. And tourism and places, the face of Greece changed when it came up on Instagram, because Mark's missus or Mark himself would have gone, damn, this is a nice place to holiday, or Maldives, for example, or some regional place we've never even heard of. Because when you look at that image does something to you. You want to go and experience it. You want to go and buy it, and it means something to you. Let's quickly, I want to share my screen because I've got a few really interesting things before we wrap this up, because these things just really blew my mind, and it gives people perspective of how we work as human beings. So this is a Paul Newman, or that era Daytona. So they used to sell for about $215 USD. And this same watch, a race car driver in America, the Paul Newman Daytona, the Panda Daytona, for the people who don't know or people who know, sold for $17.5 million at an auction, right? Now, when you go and look, that was the exact one with the white dial. So not that one, but it was the reverse color of that dial. Now, when you look at, when we were speaking about Jay-Z, got a little Kim there. But when we speak about Jay-Z, Rolls-Royce actually handmade only, I think there are 4 or 5 cars. It was called the Bolt Tech, and $28 million was each car. And they handpicked their customers who paid in advance. And I think Jay-Z and Beyonce are one of these owners. The richest people were denied. I think a sheikh from the Middle East or something and so on. These vehicles, Jay-Z didn't go and say, hey, I can buy a Rolls-Royce for $700,000. Why should I buy a $28 million Rolls-Royce? Rolls-Royce fit out, if we can create a vehicle that is unique to an individual, tailor it to them and make only 4 or 5 in the world, we can get $28 million per car. Plus, Jay-Z is not an idiot. He goes, I've only got one of these. No one else does. Mine is unique to even the other guy who bought the similar car. And they're going to go up in value, right? So all these rich people have somehow hacked a way to understanding. In fact, let me show you. I don't know if they're art fans here or car fans here. You can see some really, really nice cars that have sold at exorbitant value. So a McLaren F1, an iconic supercar. They used to sell for about 100, 150, 200,000 USD in 1995. And today they sell for well over $20 million. Okay, so I don't know any real estate that went from 1995 $1 million and that sell for $20 million today. You can look at some of these Ferraris, you can look at, and that's what I'm saying. So when you're indulging in these things, when you're understanding these things, if you just go and buy stuff to flex, you're not going to really get a result. Are you really buying something which is an item, or are you buying an experience that is going to is going to be important to people for generations to come? A Ferrari is not a car. A Ferrari is telling, it's a sensation. It's a feeling that you feel, right? So these are some really, really important things that are happening around the world that we need to understand. Now, Sotheby's, if you guys are familiar with art, Basquiat used to be a homeless African-American gentleman who died quite early. He used to do street art. And after his demise, Basquiat's painting started to sell for $50 to $100 million. This one, in fact, was an example of $24 million sale. And when you look at that painting, some person watching this call might be like, dude, my 3-year-old could have drawn that. But that's not the point. The point is not how much was the canvas, how much was the paint, was it sketched, was it identical. Our ideology behind value has to change, and we got to understand the game that the top 1% understand. Look at this. A box of Pokemon cards sold for more than $400,000, right? This is stuff that you can't explain. This is stuff you can't explain. And Sean, to really, really summarize today's conversation is, I often see this missing in real estate investors, right? I often see this, all three of us, we work in the game of real estate, we invest in the game of real estate. And as much as I'd love to continue to talk about this, but I think this is a very important point to be made here. I often see people go, oh, I need a 5-bedroom house with a 3-car garage or a 2-car garage with 3 bathrooms on an 880 block is valuable. It is. 100% it is. But it depends on where it is, right? So just because a 3-bedroom house in Double Bay is on a 300 square block, that is always, not today, mate, not tomorrow, even in 100 years, that is going to be more expensive than a 500 meter square block right next to Blacktown railway station. It's not about how many bedrooms or bathrooms. There is something that suburb makes them say, and this makes me, you and I, we always joke about the Box Hill. People who are not familiar, Northwest Sydney corridor, Box Hill was a new suburb, and Box Hill just shot up. Like, Box Hill just went nuts. Like, I saw a resale there for $1.6 million. No train station. They're literally horse paddocks, right? It's in the middle of nowhere. And from theory, if train stations and hospitals and that sort of infrastructure made things go up value, then properties close to Blacktown Station should have been more expensive than Box Hill. I don't even think, and correct me if I'm wrong, anyone who lives in Box Hill, I don't even think you guys got a Coles or a Woolies as yet. He's still going to drive North Kellyville or Rouse Hill, right? So I call this the Rolex phenomenon. There is stuff that we as individuals have to look beyond. you want to make money in the marketplace, you got to buy things, whether it's watches is your thing, Pokemon cards, real estate, shares. The things that one cannot explain, the things that don't show up in the balance sheet, the things that don't show up in your cash flow statements, the things that might not be a tax deduction, but those things touch and make a certain person feel a certain way. So maybe the Box Hill explanation could be people who are willing to be in the Hillshire Council away from any convenient thing. There was a little bit of FOMO in the market and chose to buy there instead of being in, I don't know, St. Mary's, for example, right? Where there is a train station. So that says a lot. That says a lot. Like, Sean, today, Mark, you and I have seen sales of people buying two-bedroom apartments in Potts Point or buying two-bedroom apartments in Bellevue Hill or Dover Heights for $3 and $4 million. And people, those same people might be spending $3-4 million in Bellevue. So it's not, it comes down to preferences. It comes down to where people are willing to spend money. And do you have the understanding to understand this underlying pulse beyond the balance sheet to find these growth factors, that extra mile factor? What do you guys think?
When you're looking at something like a situation of what we're talking about, so topic of something like the luxury, topic of you know, overpaying for certain assets like this, where it looks like it's overpaying for the normal market, but just in, let's say, general terms, why? What is the science behind why people want to own a one-of-one car? What is the science behind why people want to have, let's say, the only house overlooking a specific ocean? It actually boils down to something known as exclusivity, right? So if something's exclusive, if something's limited, it makes you, in an innate way, feel special. Because you're, you know, human beings generally crave the idea of being loved, being wanted, being cared for, and everything. So everyone knows Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? But at the same time, having something that's unique to the whole marketplace gives you this innate sense of feeling special. And if you're feeling special because you've got, let's say, one that's exclusive that only 500 people in the whole world can enjoy, there can't be 20,000 homeowners in the suburb of Double Bay. But sure, there could be 10,000 homeowners in the suburb of Double Bay. So it's always this constant battle of saying, who is going to be the homeowner in that area? Mm-hmm. Who is going to be one of the lucky guys that get the limited edition car? And when you're looking at companies that protect brand value and companies that protect brand reputation, the reason they get you to sign off and say you're not going to flip it is because that company wants to build a culture that protects that brand as well. For example, I know someone from Porsche who got blacklisted because he flipped a car the minute it became available. It was a limited edition 911. He gets it and he flips it for sale. So if he gets it and he flips it, I think he purchased it for about 200 odd K, if I'm not wrong. So maybe we can plug in an article somewhere in the links below. But someone who bought the Porsche 911, it was the green edition, and flipped it straight away for like something obscene, like 500 and 600 grand, got blacklisted from being part of the VIP release in the future. Because even the brands don't want to be hauled out like this.
100%. Mark should have been done under a fake name. I think, you know what, this just reminds me of something. So the other day, this came to my notice. I wouldn't take credit here, but, you know, in anywhere around the world, I go back. My parents still live in India, so I go back whenever I can, probably a summer holiday, so on and so forth, every 2 years or whatever, for a couple of weeks. And you travel around the world, so on and so forth. Sydney's got a thing, and Australia's got a thing. And I always used to wonder why people, like a lot of people always ask you, hey, so where do you live? Like in normal conversation, like people ask you, hey, what do you do for work? Where do you live? And you know, you would just say, hey, I live so in such and such place. Someone actually brought this to my notice, which blew my mind. People don't care where you live. They're measuring you up. So Sean, if you ask me where I live, and if a name dropped a suburb that meant something, your automatic perception of me changes, right? And that word spreads. And we've seen that in the Hills District, where the new suburbs such as, say, Marsden Park or like the Ponds, they're as good as anything else, for example, right? But yet, on the other side, just on the other side, if it's got the Hillshire Council, there's a premium up there. Same thing between the North Shore and the eastern suburbs. There's this little bit more than in Double Bay or Bellevue Hill, you end up paying over Mossman, right? Waterfront properties, both affluent, but it's just that 1%. And These are the things that frustrate me, that when on a day-to-day basis, sometimes I see people make decisions based on rules that don't make sense, where they're going, I just for the sake of ticking X amount of land, X amount of this. Look, it's very different if you're going to go and buy 100 acres in Dura. That's a completely, you're a land banker, you're land lease. But if you're switching up suburbs over 50 meter square blocks, and you're going to switch from a double bay to an Claymore, you're kidding yourself. You're kidding yourself. You're completely discounting yourself. And these are the sort of things that don't show up. So if you're out there, if you're someone who's been investing, if you even if you're buying watches, guys, and this is what makes the rich richer. Like Mark's bought himself a watch that he's really wanted, and it's gone up 40% in value. So even the fun stuff becomes an asset if you really understand the behavioral economics, you understand a niche. So whether it's whiskey, whether it is property, whether it is watches, whether it is cars, whatever floats your boat, please do not understand the importance of behavioral economics. Everything is not a balance sheet. Everything is not a yield. Some things cannot be explained. Some things just a feeling, and a feeling that is unique to you. And if 100 people think the same way, so Mark's beautiful Rolly, I love it, right? White dial, black dial, stainless steel, I absolutely love it. And if people continue to love that sort of watch, there's going to be value attached to it. People continue to love a certain sort of suburb, there's value attached to it.
But here's the interesting thing, right? Here's the super interesting thing. Watch has done well, it's gone up in value. But all that value is perceived value. Now, when I say it's perceived value, right now we could cash the 40% profit, take it and put it into something else. We could buy tangible assets with it. We could buy food with it. We could do whatever we want with it, clothing. But when someone like this purchases an asset like that, Mark, it's not in the selling plans, is it? You have an excellent saying about holding on, you know, any Rolex owner, you have an amazing saying about it by just being the hand holder of it or just being someone who's looking after it until they pass it on.
Exactly. What do they say in crypto? HODL.
HODL. because even a watch like this, it's done so well, but it doesn't mean we're going to be cashing it in, taking the profits and doing something. So that value is going to keep going up over time. Let's say it slowly becomes a collectible and now it passes on to your next generation. If that person sees the value in the watch, then maybe they wouldn't sell it off either. So then does the value chain just keep growing because it's become a generational asset now? Same thing with generational properties that have been stuck in Double Bay, been stuck in Vaucluse for let's say, you know, 80 to 100 years. So for things like this, because the value is rising. But one thing I love about investment real estate, though, is while that value is rising, you can take that equity and still use it without disposing the asset. One thing on a watch we haven't been able to do is remortgage it just yet. But if someone has an IP,
you need a little equity release or another AP, some leverage on a pate. 100%. Exactly. I agree with you. And Mark actually offline, before we went live, said something really, really nice. He said, Tesh, I'll tell you something. I have a long-term view when it comes to things I like. So be it my investments, be it my business, be it my watches, be it things that I appreciate and I'm fond of, my view on those things is to have them long term. I'm not here just to be a speculator. I'm not here to quick click and flip, but I'm here to hold these things, enjoy those things as I earn them and for the fruits of appreciating. Who wouldn't want to go buy a handbag that's gone up in value? Who wouldn't want to hang a painting that I bought for $50,000 worth, I don't know, $27 million? Who wouldn't want to buy a car for $300,000, which is worth $20 million today? Who wouldn't want to buy a watch for $252 that sold for about $17 million or something? So even when it comes to real estate, you guys, we got to look beyond just, are the yields important? Are cash flow analysis important? Is macro and microeconomic factors important? Absolutely. But like Sean has said, there's stuff out there that are not going to show up on the balance sheet, and you just got to have the common sense, the intelligence to read between the lines, understand what that suburb, what that property, what that watch, what that piece of art means to society, for people. And if there are enough like-minded people there, like you gave me the Vaucluse example, the last 100 years of holding that wealth, there's no reason why You can't own things that you love, that you cherish, you enjoy, and make money. Like, no one's complaining. No one's complaining. 100%. Yeah. On that note, boys, I reckon it's time for us to wrap up our Friday Night Live, unless we've got another two or three points you guys wanted to add to that.
Yeah, I think just overall, when you the only thing I'm ever going to add in there, thanks, Tanushka, the only thing I'm ever going to add in there is, you know, the fact that if you can somehow figure out a way for these luxury items, because there's something also like luxury real estate, what real estate does is it gives you the idea of taking leverage out, right? So taking leverage out of your cash or your paper wealth position today and turning it into reality without selling the asset. Now, why that's super important is whether you're buying luxury real estate or whether you're buying, let's say, residential real estate, I always like tying it back into real estate because everything in the world is real estate. No matter where you go, you're either standing, sitting, or living in real estate. So whatever you do, sign here, pay now, sign up so that we can help you maximize your real estate. But apart from all the annoying plugs, seriously, if there was a watch that went up in value and someone could help remortgage it, I do feel there is a sub broker business that does this. For example, you can go to a pawn shop and you can pass on collateral to borrow cash, right? But at the same time, you've got a situation where the lending rates aren't the same because the values of watches that have maybe skyrocketed in a short period of time or cars that have skyrocketed, they actually still do have their own ebbs and flows long term. For example, I know a limited edition Lamborghini went up to being worth 800 grand and then corrected back to 600. Now it's back up to 800. So you're always going to have ebbs and flows because even with cards, right? Like Michael Jordan PSA cards, those small cards that people used to flip. So what happened was one documentary changed the perception of those cards and brought it to life. One documentary. Everyone saw The Last Dance and then the value of those cards ended up selling for upwards of the high set of hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? Now, is that real worth based on what it's today? No, so it might correct, but long-term, because it can never be made again, because of the exclusivity, that's exactly what real estate is. You can't recreate that space unless we start going into Mars, but for Mars, we will be the number one investment firm on Mars. Don't you worry.
Shout out, Elon.
Mark's more than happy to onboard you right here, right now, guys.
Yeah, look, I think you work on, sorry, one other point there is on the back of what Sean is saying, 100% agree. I was actually going to mention it a bit earlier is, I guess what we see in the market is determined by market view and how they perceive it to be of value to them. But I also believe it's the outside factors. Let's say if we go back, let's say 10 years ago from now, 2011, social media was, or even let's go further back than that. Let's say 2008, 2009. Social media was a lot different aspects back then as it is now. Now a lot more educational. It's a lot more business focused. There's, you know, people are connecting with people all across the world. I would not have known about Jay-Z having a $2.5 million watch or whatever it is, unless it was because of social media. And I think even the perception of Rolex, for example, right? It's so tapped into these days, right? Patek as well, same thing, right? The value of these watches are going through the roof, right? Through the roof, even if you use Patek. But I personally believe that boils down to social media presence. I think that believes to getting out to a lot more people going, wow, I would love one of them. When a lot more people know about a certain product or item, I believe that's where further market value gets driven. Kesh, you mentioned the Norwest Corridor before. Like, let's use Box Hill as an example. You know, market conditions in Sydney, which was where everyone has always wanted to live around or be in the closest proximity possible to the CBD because that's where everyone went to work, is now changing immensely, where there are business hubs being built in the western suburbs, you know, I guess more regional suburbs, you know, a lot more people migrating to places like Newcastle now and whatnot because there's a lot of opportunity outside of the Sydney CBD. And, you know, people are, you know, again, coming down to their perception going, I want to live here because it serves me XYZ purpose. And that XYZ purpose might mean closer to station, closer to work. I get to spend less doing one thing in order to spend more time doing another. And I know the luxury item isn't necessarily the best comparison in that regard, but I think it doesn't matter whether it is a house, a watch, or anything, it's all about not only, yes, the feeling gives you inside and the achievement, the value it adds to your life as well, whatsoever that, even if a person that steers very clear of social media and doesn't want to impress anyone, still would go out and buy a watch to know that when he's at dinner with someone, they're going to go, hey, nice watch. They might be at a business meeting and the opposing person may go, hey, I notice you've got a crown poking out of your little cuff there. What watch are you wearing? You know, and it starts more conversation, which may lead to bigger business deals. So there's always what I believe, not only just you know a mental perspective behind it, but also you know market perspective as well.
100%. That was so well put, Mark. I honestly think that's so well put. How value is starting to change, even in the real estate market, how people's lifestyles are starting to change, and it's reflecting in the price. And as things have started to get more and more expensive, people are going, if I'm going to pay a premium, where do I see myself living? In fact, I have a very old joke where sometimes people go, oh, you know, I don't understand why the suburbs are so expensive. They don't have a train station. I said, maybe rich people drive a car to work. And they don't take the train. But train stations and hospitals, are they important infrastructure? Absolutely. But I feel business parks, employment hubs, they've become very important. We can see a lot of businesses today, the knowledge workers working from home, that is starting to reflect in your right. Money is moving elsewhere. The Byron Bays, for example. No one cared about Byron Bay 20 years ago. And today, they're like, houses selling for $7, $8, $10, $20 million. And all it takes is one Chris Hemsworth and a Zac Efron, I don't know, meeting his girlfriend at a cafe. And that influence, they call, mate, that's some Bitcoin shit right there. That's some Bitcoin stuff. But you're right, Mark. 100%. So well put. So well put.
And because we were talking about things like luxury items, like luxury watch, luxury car, luxury house, one thing that I wanted to talk about was just so that the audience can know a little bit about your personality tastes as well from you both. I wanted to ask you both the same question. So let's say now you've got the pick of one suburb to live in for the rest of your life, one car for the rest of your life, and one watch for the rest of your life. Which one are you both picking?
Only one.
And I know you both have luxury tastes anyway, so I don't have to say make it luxurious.
I dislike the question, Sean. When it comes to real estate, it's very hard. I got to pick whether I'm on the hills or the ocean. I'll go first. Actually, you know what? Right now, if this is the world we live in, all things being equal, I'd probably buy acreage in not like in the middle of Whoop, but like probably like Dural, Kenters, 5-10 acres. Big house, 12-car garage, mini golf course. The next time Auntie Gladys locks us up, I'm balling. I'm having a great time. So probably that. From a house perspective, car. That is the hardest thing for me. But if I had to give you a cop-out answer, it would probably be like a, I don't know, Lambo Urus. So I've got the best of both worlds. So I've got the Lambo and I've got the SUV. So it's practical. Take the kids to school. And what's your third question? The watch.
One only.
Maybe a plain Jane stainless steel Audemars Piguet Royal Oak.
AP, baby, AP. Nice. Michael Renzo.
Look, I think mine's very specific. 30 Marine Parade Maruga.
And if you're listening, the owner's listening right now. Sign here so we can do your.
If the owners are listening, understand I'm coming for your house. 30 Marine Parade, that's where I'm going. As for watch, I've always been a big fan of the GMT, and in particular, the Gold Casino. If you guys know, it's the black bezel, green face with the all gold.
Money,
yeah, that's right. And the in recent times, I must admit, and Sean, this is something you know very well in regards to the vehicle. We'll boil that down to a Porsche 911 Turbo S 992. As I said, very specific. We know exactly what's happening. Yeah, that's me. So
I love the 992 Turbo S. Don't worry about family. you only need your partner in there with you, and that's to break her neck.
I will probably put a tow on the back of the 911. I'm around in a trailer. So
that would be great. You'd be number one on TikTok and the gram.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, so that's me.
Sean, back at you now.
My partner's barking at me on the side saying go for a Patek Philippe for the watch. But for the watch, I just have to pick my one and only favorite watch, which is it's nothing too exclusive. I wouldn't mind owning exclusive ones, but it's a very simple. It's a very basic Rolex. Sorry, I think I'm echoing. Is there an echo? Can you guys hear
echo?
I think everyone's echoing.
There we go.
Okay, either way, we're almost done. Which is the and for the one and only location of
I'll try and mute everyone.
Can we try and mute everyone?
Let's try that. Let me go test 1 2 1 2. Okay, so you said Murcielago Lambo Classic, love that. You said we missed the watch. Type it in the chat for me, Sean. I'll repeat it before I wrap this up. And I got the Dural house, so we're gonna be neighbors, are we? Acreage. So Murcielago has to be the SV. Get it? What was the house? Dural. Oh, Sean's in Vaucluse. We got that. Absolutely. And the white home. Perfect. And what was the watch? Put in the chat for me, guys. Put in the chat for me. The Rolex house. Oh, Sean, you know what? I have a story. I won't go into it now because it's been a long time. I actually used to own a Hulk that I got below market, and I flipped and I bought a Cosmograph Daytona on a rubber strap, the flex strap. So I've got a story for that maybe on next time. But ladies and gentlemen, I think we would have gone on for hours and hours. It was a different twist, a different spin on this. And thank you, Mark. Thank you, Sean. You guys were amazing. I loved your stories. Mark, congratulations on the 40% up. People are loving it. People are absolutely loving it. Thank you, everyone, for watching. We really, really appreciate it. Friday Night Lives only at JRPP. Let us know in the comments what you guys thought. If you want a certain topic to be discussed, put it in the chat for us. Could be property, could be something else. We'd love to hear from you. And if you've enjoyed this, if it's been valuable, you've had a good laugh, give us a like, a thumbs up, a comment, a share, let your friends know. Thank you very much. Good night. Let's wave and smile, boys. Thank you.